5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Crisis reveals character is something we've probably all been thinking about since March, especially in our leaders, you'd have to say. COVID has really sorted the wheat from the chaff. Look at our own Premier, Mark McGowan, as opposed to Queensland's leader, Anastasia Palaszczuk, and Dan Andrews in Victoria. All of their approaches to this deadly virus couldn't be more different. All have been pretty heavy-handed, but McGowan, while he's been tough and using fear as a great motivator for us to do the right thing, Palaszczuk and Andrews have not been as, aware, bit of social cop-on to the situation surrounding them, and their people, because of that, are terrified and experiencing some absolutely horrible situations and events. But are we here in WA getting more frustrated and cranky? Have we got a bit of cabin fever, potentially? I know school holidays are coming up and people are pretty feral right now. But all this week, in the paper, on the news and on the radio, we've heard and read about violence around WA, and there over the past couple of days, the call to send stranded Aussies overseas to a detention centre surrounded by bikies, sex criminals and barbed wire, as opposed to isolating in one of the 15,000 rooms left stranded in Perth. Times are tough. Everyone is tired. Everyone is doing their best. But one shining light today from the bin fire that is 2020, and this week especially, is that following our stories of yesterday around that horrific assaults in the northern part of WA with DV, is that the AG, John Quigley, is now considering following the Northern Territory's lead to ensure that police wear body cam cameras so that any type of imagery captured can be used as a defence for domestic violence victims. It's a great step forward and just one way that things can happen when we talk about them enough. It's a massive show. We've got lots to talk about. JobKeeper, Job Seeker, and everything in between. Let's get into it.
The West Live. The West Live. With Jenna Clark.
About 1.5 million Aussies are receiving Job Seeker payments, previously known as Newstart. For part-time employees, their payments will fall later, from September 28 to $750 a fortnight, and then again in January, $650 a fortnight. All payments are scheduled to end in March next year. Is this all a bit too soon? And are we pulling out the safety net from our most vulnerable too early by Monday week? Joining me now is WACOS CEO Louise Giolito. Louise, are people ready to come out of the job seeker, job keeper fog?
Good morning, Jenna. Thanks for having me on the show. And the answer is really, really simple to that. It's way too soon to be pulling the rug out.
Yeah.
We've known, and I'll concentrate just on the job seeker, which people sort of know as sort of the unemployment benefits
yes.
that people are on. Well before COVID, there was a lot of advocacy and a lot of calls, not just from the community service sector and the likes of WACOS,
indeed.
But also from economists, even John Howard was saying it was way too low.
Yes.
So, and everybody identified you couldn't live on $40 a week. And then COVID hit and they doubled it
yeah.
to $560, which was fantastic. But in a couple of weeks, well, almost under 2 weeks' time, it's
yeah.
going to drop by $300.
Yeah.
And people will be living below the poverty line. And when I say that, I want people to realise that also includes families, single parents with children who will be pushed back under the poverty line once again.
And that's the thing, isn't it, Louise, because we're going to see them, and then obviously when they are, there'll be new sort of ways that they have to qualify for Job Seeker, which will mean that they'll have to start applying for 8 jobs as opposed to 4, which can also put added stress if you are, you know, a single parent household. There's all of that issues that happen. In terms of jobs, we keep hearing that our unemployment rate is rebounding quite well, but you're seeing this on the front line. Are there enough jobs to go around in WA? Because as we've heard from your national counterparts throughout the week, there are only about 12 jobs for everyone. There's only one job for every 12 people. So what do you think? How do we move forward as a community on this?
Yeah, in WA, we estimate there's for every job, there's 9 people actually applying. And we know there's some hotspot areas, and there's a lot of conversations about regional WA and seasonal workers and picking fruit. But if you're established in Perth, have a home, have rental or a mortgage, it's not as easy just to pick up and take very seasonal work, which is extremely low paid at times.
Yes.
So there really isn't the jobs. I know I've got friends, really close friends. I've got family who have worked every day of their life, never been unemployed, and they're working 50% of the time now. And because of the circumstances, I've had friends that have lost jobs who are applying. They're applying for an immense amount of jobs that are actually out there. And we've got to remember, not everybody, you can't just walk into any job depending on your fitness level, depending on your skills, your experience, what you know. So it doesn't mean, you know, that if you were working in hospitality one day that you can go and work in a bank the next.
Yeah.
But it's the skills need and what's actually missing. And one of our real fears in WA, and you may have heard this expression before, it's going to be a pink recession. We know that the hardest hit is women and young people. And the recovery plans in WA, a lot of that is based on construction, you know, shovel-ready projects.
Yeah.
Get people back in work, but do we have all those skills ready for those people to actually do those jobs? And it's generally, and I know women can work in those sectors, promote, support it, but they're not the industries where they've lost their jobs and they don't have the skills to go and step into work in construction.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such a wider conversation to be had about how we really galvanise our workforce moving forward to ensure that we get people into every type of sector and every type of job, and upskilling is such a big thing. But I guess from also as we move into further recovery phases with COVID, community services and frontline services specifically around mental health, domestic violence, I mean, we've seen these issues have been highlighted. In some cases, a 300% increase in domestic violence in some areas. That's going to come to a bit of a tipping point, isn't it, when, you know, these we wind back the welfare state. Are you concerned that WA doesn't have the resources required to help victims or people that do fall below the poverty line when all of this winds back?
I think a really good example of this is housing. We know we've got a really shortfall in social and affordable housing. Mm-hmm. That was before COVID. And, you know, many of your listeners will know the rental market is actually ridiculous at the moment with very, very small vacancies, and especially at the lower end. So if you're talking $250 to even up to $350, $400, there's an absolute high demand. So, with you know, when these payments start coming off, and when we talk about JobKeeper, they're the people who are currently on $750 a week. They're the new clients that our financial counsellors and our emergency relief are seeing, because even on $750 a week, it's not enough to cover all their outgoings, their mortgage repayments, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So when that actually does hit and we start seeing these cuts, there'll be a much greater demand on our social, and when I say affordable housing, even the private rental market. The state government's done the right thing and put a moratorium of no more rent increases. But what's going to happen to all those people who are going to lose their homes? And then, well, you know, they're going to be repossessed. They're going to be looking, you know, to come into the affordable market or the social housing. And the wait list in social housing is huge.
Yeah.
So this state government has committed. They are building more. But the problem we've had, and this is through multiple, you know, it's not just this government, previous governments, they never kept up. Mm-hmm. Actually, housing stock has fallen behind for many, many, many years.
Right. In terms of social housing and public housing, I mean?
Yeah, so when I talk about social housing, that's public housing. So for many, many years, consecutive governments, it's actually fallen behind. While they're doing new builds, they haven't kept up, you know, with the stock and et cetera they've sold. So this government has committed there will be some new builds made, but we need to be purchasing. The wait list is huge. It's well over 10,000 people. And with the onslaught of, you know, people and more people losing their homes or being hit by not, you know, we're going to have the cut in JobSeeker and JobKeeper, you'll find increased demand on our social housing and our public housing stock.
It's just terrifying. And do you think that people don't really understand the severity of the situation come, you know, Monday week and then, of course, December and then March, the fact that we could see, you know, even more homelessness and see, you know, families sleeping in cars in WA?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen an increasing number of people who are homeless. I mean, there's been a lot of publicity, especially around Perth and the city, but there's so many people who are couch surfing. Mm. You find women and children, they'll be sleeping in cars, so they're not very, it's not public, it's not in your face.
Yeah.
Overcrowding in houses because people have lost. So it won't like instantly happen. It will be a cumulative effect that'll happen over the next few months. Mm-hmm. And this federal government still hasn't committed to a permanent increase in jobs in JobSeeker. We're saying it needs to be above, at a minimum above the poverty line, mm-hmm. which is $467. But they're, you know, going to be pushing it back to $280 a week. That's what's on the horizon.
Yeah.
And we know the devastating impacts that has on people. People don't eat three meals a day, impacts their mental health, they yeah. lose their accommodation, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you, I've been thinking about this a lot, and please excuse, I don't mean this to sound insensitive or things like that, but I remember growing up and hearing the phrase doll bludger was such a really popular thing that, you know, really popped off with tabloid media and things like that. Are you concerned that we're going to see the same type of rhetoric happen when we've got one portion of politicians and the community saying, there's heaps of jobs, just get into mining and resources, and then another saying, like yourself, saying, no, no, these are the actual hard facts of where we were starting before COVID. Are you concerned that we're going to see a next generation of people arguing over this new type of doll bludger, in inverted commas?
Yeah, that's been on the cards. It's been on the cards for many, many years, and it's been the rhetoric of federal government, you know, through mutual obligations. You'll see a series in the media of, you know, everybody wanting to move down south and surf and living off the dole. But yeah. I challenge anyone to try and live off $280 a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, have a good life down and living and surfing. It's not the truth.
Yeah.
But those images are what's actually put up all the time. We work with a group of, it's a long-term piece of research we do with all our families. It's called 100 Families.
Mm-hmm.
And they're single parents and mothers. And we know the positive impact the increase in JobSeeker has had on their lives, being able to go to uni every day because they can put petrol in their car and
yeah.
get fixed. I can talk for a long time. But I am really, really concerned that rhetoric will actually start up again. We've started seeing the signs. I think there's an absolute growth in empathy and understanding because most people now know someone who's been impacted. Even in WA, who's in a much better situation than the rest of the country, knows somebody that's been impacted.
Indeed.
And, you know, and the cost that's having. So it's really, really grown. And the last thing we want is this divide of deserving and non-deserving poor.
Mm.
So there is a real WACOS with a whole bunch of partner organisations did a survey recently, and it was over 73% of West Australians all agree income support isn't high enough. You know, the vast majority said they needed a minimum of $500 per week to pay
mm-hmm.
their bills.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, you know, it was a rather large survey we did. And so there is real empathy in the West Australian community. There's real understanding that nobody wants children to be living in poverty or knowing that people are actually doing it tough.
And yeah.
And the majority of people who are unemployed are young people, and a lot of them aren't eligible for JobSeeker because they might be living with their parents
yeah.
and they're under the age of 21, or in the around 40 years of age. That's the largest proportion of people, and they want to work.
Yeah.
They don't not want to work.
Yeah.
They want their independence.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a conversation, like you said, I could talk about this for hours because I think that it's going to be really interesting to see how the rhetoric and the narrative sort of changes over the next couple of months and then into the next generation. One final question for you though, Louise, is that I guess you've probably been following the City of Perth mayoral elections and campaign quite closely. Obviously, we've touched on it earlier. Homelessness is a big issue. Have you been consulting with any of the candidates about your ideas for how they should handle the situation?
I've met with one of the candidates, Diane.
Yes.
Hopefully I've got that name right.
Dibane, yes.
But but I know Shelter WA have an event coming up where I think they've got all seven coming along.
Yes.
So Shelter WA is the peak body that looks at housing and homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've all agreed to come along and meet with the community service sector and to put forward their point of views. I know it's varying,
yeah.
but it's not I'll leave it with, it's not a criminal offence to be homeless.
Indeed.
And they're often people who are homeless, who are the victims of crime, and we need to be supporting those people. And some of these people have mental health, drug and alcohol issues, so there's a myriad of issues, and nobody wants to see those people living on the streets, you know, in doorways in Perth, most of all the homeless people themselves.
Yeah, indeed. WACOS CEO Louise Giolito, you do an amazing job here in WA. Thank you so very much for your time. We'll speak to you again on the West Live soon.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Right now, West Australian land sales are going absolutely bananas, spurred on by government building bonus grants. And after a big lull in March, land and house sales have tripled since these bonuses became available. And we're scrambling to keep up, apparently. So is this going to go from strength to strength? Joining me now is Kath Hart, who is the director of the Housing Industry Association of WA. Kath, welcome to the show. Now, what are home sales doing in WA and what can we expect come December?
Hi, Jenna. Look, thanks for having me. So home sales have been, a very interesting space to watch this year.
Indeed.
We were seeing some signs of recovery in the local home building market in January.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, COVID changed all of that, and then we kind of had to revise our forecast down to doing fewer than 10,000 starts. And so we were lobbying for the, for the government to provide some consumer stimulus, which they did do, and that was in about June, and we were still in phase two restrictions at that stage,
mm-hmm.
and so no one really knew kind of how the West Australian economy would recover, or whether we would find ourselves back in lockdown like other states have experienced. But
yeah.
In WA, the grants are a bit of a green light for confidence, and we saw a massive surge in sales. The first month we went from a 20-year low in housing starts and had a 211% increase from May to June in housing sales. So it's been pretty extraordinary. But I guess the interesting thing is that we were coming off a very low base. The last couple of years have been really tough. And that's that end of the last mining boom when a lot of people who were living in WA mm-hmm. went back over east. So we'd kind of been underbuilding for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But the grants have been really effective in terms of keeping jobs in the industry and helping stimulate the economy. So we've had 3 months of grant-related activity, and that showed 175% increase over that quarter in home sales. So
wow.
So those projects are all in the pipeline now, and they're starting to come to site in the next couple of months.
Amazing. You must be pretty excited that the government did expend the building bonus grants into, later on, because we saw earlier in the week about some conjecture of the fact that some builders, because they do work on, they're very very clever people. They make sure that if we can't get a pad down by December, that kind of means that some people miss out on those things. You must be glad that the government have listened to your calls.
Well, we're still working with them on that. They've put in some extra money for the program because of the higher than expected initial demand.
Mm-hmm.
However, the what we've been lobbying for, which they haven't taken on, well, which we're still working on, I'll say, is for an extension to the commencement timeframe. So
sure.
Not the program, you have to sign a contract by the end of December. We're not asking for that to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
But we are saying we would like for land developers and the builders to be given extra time to do what they need to do before they have to commence. At the moment, under the state scheme, you have to kind of get your slab down as you get your site work commenced within 6 months, and for the federal scheme, you have to have it within 3 months, but you have an option for an extension.
Right.
But the big challenge we've got is really around labour and a lack of titled land. So you can't start building your dream home until you've got the land titled. And to get the lot titled is a little bit more than just, shoving some dirt around on a block. You've got to kind of put in, all the sewage and the pipes, and you've got to get kind of the road and curbs and all that kind of thing ready
mm-hmm.
Before the WA Planning Commission will give you the tick and say, yeah, that's a titled lot.
Right.
So we're saying we'd like for the land developers still have until 30 June next year to get their lots titled, and then for builders to be given a reasonable time frame to start after the lots titled for about, up to 6 months.
Sure. I guess what's interesting to me, Kathy, is we've spoken to people like Nigel Satterley on the show before and Dale Alcott and things like that. Are those, going to those estates where those developers sort of set up the most popular, or who's building these houses and in which suburbs are they focusing on?
Oh, look, so we're seeing a lot of activity in the Greenfield site, and
mm-hmm.
we do a bit of a heat map of where the activity is coming from, and because we've been trying to work with all the different stakeholders in the process to let them know what's coming through the pipeline. So we're seeing, real popularity in the estates.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also, interestingly, seen a massive amount of activity in some of those infill areas, which I think is people looking at bowling over their old home and you know, rebuilding. And yeah. So places, you know, like in Stirling, for instance, have had a huge, huge increase in the number of people signing contracts there, which is really interesting too. So the thing about the building bonus, which I thought was, you know, a really clever part of the policy, was it didn't just target first home buyers because, you know, we when we look at the impact of COVID, obviously younger people who might just be beginning their career, they may well be more vulnerable to losing those jobs. So the $20,000 grant for the building bonus at the state level is for anybody who's building any kind of new home, which I think is clever because it activates other parts of the market and doesn't just put, you know, doesn't just rely on first home buyers, I guess.
Do you, I guess we've seen some of the big mining companies encouraging people, if you want to work in the mining sector, they kind of want to do with FIFO and just have people relocate to WA. Is this a welcome initiative from you?
Yeah, well, we lobbied for it, Jenna. Think that, you know, if we saw COVID, I suppose, as an opportunity to have a bit of a reset around that. I mean, you know, we used to have a lot of intrastate FIFO, but then the last mining boom meant that it just became quite difficult. The housing market couldn't keep up. And so we had more interstate FIFO. But, you know, we never really reset that. We didn't recalibrate our local labour market with those opportunities after the boom ended. And so what happened was all those people, you know, left town. And that really impacts my sector as well in residential building because suddenly we you know, fell to a 20-year low in home building starts. And so, and that's because we had, you know, I think there were 6,000 people who were flying in and flying out at the time COVID came. So so we said, look, this is a really great opportunity to reconnect our local labour market with, you know, the extraction of West Australians, you know, minerals and resources. And so we were pleased that that happened. And we've seen people coming in now. And, you know, I think it's a reasonable policy to say if you work somewhere in WA, you should live somewhere in WA. It doesn't mean you have to live on the site. Although we've seen a lot of interest, actually, people coming into Busselton. And they commute up to site from there. So, you know, WA has got an enviable lifestyle and some really wonderful, you know, it's a wonderful part of the world.
Indeed.
And I think, so I think that, you know, I was, very actively lobbying for that policy and, you know, really pleased to see it come through. I mean, I think we've got to, we're still in a transition. You know, we've still got to work, you know, obviously government's working with the mining sector around, there are some key roles we understand that, you know, they might work on other projects around the country as well. So, you know, I think we're transitioning, but I think the really important thing is around reconnecting our local labour market and the domestic economy, the home builders like me and the retailers and the hospitality people, with people who work in those exporting industries.
Indeed. One thing, there was an event last night in the city that focused on diversity in the construction industry. You are a big champion of ensuring that gender diversity and equality is met in those sectors. I guess we've seen a lot of people don the pink high vis over the last couple of years. Do you think we're going to see a lot of young women or women of all ages to pick up shovels and join the construction industry? And how would they go about doing that?
Oh, look, we had a fantastic event last night. It was our Building Women event and it sold out in record time, which was, you know, fantastic to see. And it was, you know, it was not just for women, there were men and women there, which was great. So, look, I think that there will be people looking at careers in sectors that they hadn't considered before. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about is talking about the range of roles in construction because I think people think construction and they think, oh yeah, on site with a hammer or, you know, working, you know, in your ute driving around. And, but construction employs a whole lot of people, you know, in the pre-construction phase in terms of design and estimating and scheduling, contracts administration. There's a whole lot of activity that goes on before you actually get to, you know, get a hammer in your hand. And so I think that, you know, we've certainly seen we need people to come and work in construction. And I think we will see women, but, you know, and I think we'll also see men as well considering roles in the industry that hadn't perhaps looked at it before. Because, you know, you look at aviation and hospitality, which have been so sadly disrupted by COVID this year. Mm-hmm. So the skills that people have in those sectors are, really great customer service skills and really good at dealing with people. Well, if you go and, you know, make an investment to build a house, it's a really, it's a big decision and it's kind of an emotional journey. And, you know, we certainly have opportunities for people who have a knack for that kind of thing. So I love having the opportunity to say to people, look, you know, construction, yes, there's roles on site, and we certainly do a lot more in terms of encouraging women of all ages to consider those opportunities. But there's also roles in the office. There was a fantastic woman there last night. She was our apprentice of the year a few years ago. She's kind of come through the ranks and she just said, look, I'm seeing more women, and events like this certainly help raise the visibility because, you know, as they say, you can't be what you can't see.
Indeed. Look, I think it's fantastic, all the initiatives that you are championing. Housing Industry Association WA Director Kath Hart, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Jenna. Have a great day.
The West Live. Making news.
Matt Tinney from Sunrise. I've been trying to hold this in. My best friend Jeff Parry's also back.
I am.
Welcome back. How are you, Matt?
Very well, thank you, Jenna. And Jeff, how are you going? It's brilliant Friday in Perth, isn't it?
It's always lovely coming in here because you're always so welcoming, Jenna.
Stop it. So nice to have you back. Now, Matt, let's quickly hit these headlines so we can get to the weekend.
Yes, so an important story, first of all. A childcare worker in Perth North has been charged with four counts of aggravated assault occasioning bodily harm. This 23-year-old Quinns Rocks woman is accused of scratching four kids in her care, two boys, two girls. She's due to face Joondalup Magistrates Court next month, and police say investigations are continuing, so they're looking into more complaints on that one.
God, and another day, another bloody stabbing, this time in Beachborough.
Yeah, this time a woman, she's been arrested over a stabbing in the northern suburbs. She's accused of stabbing a man. Now, this all happened at Beach's Tavern in Beachborough. She tried to get in, apparently, and was refused entry. And three men who were inside the tavern helped staff to try to clear her out. And she got quite distressed about that and then allegedly stabbed one of these men with a knife. He's got a wound to his shoulder. He was taken to Royal Perth Hospital but discharged himself and told police that he didn't want to push it any further. But police are going to follow up with him today. So disturbing one in Beachborough overnight.
For sure. Now, a tortoise is having a birthday?
Yes. Chero, the tortoise, Galapagos tortoise at Perth Zoo, some may remember he's become world famous. He's kind of the pit bull of the Galapagos tortoise world, Mr. Worldwide, because there was a video of him getting a pedicure when the zoo reopened, the pedicure and manicure facilities for the tortoises, when COVID settled down over here.
Yes.
And more than 30 million times that video has been viewed. So Chero today is celebrating his 54th birthday. Oh. I'm told there is going to be a specially made birthday cake a little later this morning for Chero. So just a bit of history. He was born in San Diego Zoo and he came to Perth in 2005 and from all reports, absolutely loving it here.
I love it. So if you're at the zoo today, get ready for some birthday cake.
Yeah. He won't be moving in on it too quickly, I wouldn't have thought. So, you know, you'll have time to get race around there.
Indeed. Maddie, you have a lovely weekend and we'll see you on Sunrise on Monday morning and then you'll join us in the West Live after that.
You too. Have a great weekend, Jenna and Jeff.
Coming up, a Geraldton magistrate has ordered a bloke to leave town immediately. Ben O'Shea will be in with the Wild West to tell us why a little bit later. But as I mentioned earlier, Jeff Parry's here.
I love it how I haven't been here for a few weeks and I come back and we're still talking about Gerald.
Every day. He is obsessed. Absolutely.
Is he a Gero boy? We'll ask him.
No, he's from Queensland.
Oh, that's all right.
I know.
See, they've just lifted their border restrictions.
Yeah, and there's so much going on there. And then Palaszczuk's been tested for COVID.
Yeah, but she was negative. Yeah, maybe some people would go, I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Indeed. Now, how's your week been? What have you been chasing?
I actually had a look at I did a story this week on a market gardener who has a massive operation up at a place called Carrickan, which is just inland from Launceston. Mm-hmm. Huge operation. Mm. he's a leader in leaf vegetables, so, you know, lettuces, cabbages, broccoli, spinach, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You go through and you can sort of see the planting, like this stuff just gone in and this this sort of open fields, but this stuff that has just gone in and at different stages of growing. And at the end cycle, he hasn't got enough pickers to get him out of the ground. So he smashed 100,000 lettuce back into
crazy.
The ground because he couldn't get them to market. And he's cut back on his planting program. So he's back now to about 50%. The point being that he says that all the other growers that he's spoken to, there was another grower up there that was banging in carrots back into the ground because they couldn't get them out. They're machine harvested, the carrots, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But in the packing shed, that grower didn't have enough people in the packing shed to sort of, you know, get them into the boxes and into market. So they're all cutting back, which means there'll be shortages in our supermarkets.
Yeah.
And, of course, supply and demand, Jenna.
Yeah, of course.
The prices go up.
And that's the thing. Like, we'll all be whinging that we can't buy West Australian fruit and veg.
Yeah.
And this is because the cycle that continues to...
Well, that grower was predicting that, you know, we'd all be eating canned stuff and frozen stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, but, you know, everyone loves fresh vegetables.
Especially grown in just north of Perth.
Correct. So, so they were saying, look, they were after a bit of help with the allowances, the travel allowance, and the sort of the new assistance that the state government had just announced for people to wander out yonder and help pick strawberries and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Government said, no, you're too close to Perth. Anyway, that's a fight they'll probably have. But you know, the interesting fact is that a lot of these places can't get enough people to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then yet you hear your guest earlier today saying, you know, people looking for work and can't find it. So I just sort of wonder where that's going, you know.
You kind of wonder where the disconnect is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How that people can be screaming out for workers and how others can say, well, you know, there are people there, but they can't get the jobs.
Especially so close to Perth.
Mm.
If it's only a drive, it shouldn't be too much of an ask.
Mm.
Interestingly, the fight did start yesterday with a member of the opposition did pick up your story and ask the government what they were planning to do. And I think that kind of left them scratching their heads a bit to say, well, and they didn't really have any answer to it.
For the supply of workers? The point was made to me by that grower that, you know, and these are overseas workers will do it. Backpackers will do it. It's work Australians don't want to do. They won't come out there. They've organised busloads of people, like a 20-seater bus, and one person gets on it. You know, some people will come out and they'll last a day, you know, half a day. Some will pick for an hour and say, this is not for me, and leave. you know, which is... You've probably got to give it more than an hour. It's honest work. I mean, it's hard work.
And
would I like to pick lettuce? Not at my age.
No.
But if I was a younger person, and you, I read your column about sort of doing, shed packing work and all that sort of stuff as a uni student.
Yeah.
I think the idea of year 12s taking, you know, a gap year if they want to and sort of go bush for a year. Great idea.
It is so fun.
Yeah.
So fun.
I mean, there's a point about the backpackers. I mean, it's the sort of work. They want to do that sort of stuff. They're making a bit of money. They go to the pub at night time. It's a social thing for them, a real social thing.
Indeed.
But they just ain't there anymore.
I know.
It's a case of doing with what you have.
It will be really interesting to see come Monday week when JobSeeker winds back. People that are on that now, currently they have to apply for 4 jobs, they'll have to apply for 8.
Yep.
And whether they do hang around to do jobs like that because, the labour, it is backbreaking, especially picking lettuce. Packing shed stuff, stand on a bit of rubber, you'll be fine.
Easy. Move pallets around, you know, it's all right.
Just bend your knees a lot.
But I think, you know, people should be made to look for work. If they're on those job seeker payments, you know, they need to take a view that I'm not going to be on this forever, and it's better to have a job than and I understand. I mean, obviously, the level that it's being paid at the moment, there's that argument about, you know, people have got to be able to live, but then if they haven't got a job and then you pay them at a level that is a disincentive to go and get work, then, you know, that's a problem too.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to keep the wheels turning.
Yes.
So, look, finding that balance, thankfully, I don't have to sort of strike a number that's the appropriate number to pay someone who's out of work. But, and then, of course, this week we've seen the employment numbers improve. So that's a great sign.
Mm.
That, you know, maybe the economy is doing a little bit better than we've sort of had a view that it's doing. Mm. So, you know, there's some good signs there.
Yeah. So it was week two of a 3-week sitting for WA Parliament. How do you think the government are feeling? As we saw Treasurer Ben White out and about this week with the employment numbers up, the fact that WA is spending more in retail, in entertainment and travel. Is it all just fake? Or do you think that they're legitimately looking at these numbers to be a good sign for where we'll be in the next couple of months?
Well, look, is it fake? I mean, that, you know, the numbers would say, look, things are getting better, it's improving. And if you've got a job, and you're in Western Australia and you're able to move around, unlike Melbourne, life's pretty good.
Life's sweet.
Exactly. Mm. So, you know, is it smoke and mirrors? No, I don't think it's smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. Is life here in Perth good at the moment? Yes, it is, mm-hmm. Given what's going on in the rest of the world and in some parts of the country. But we've got to get the borders open. Oof. You know, I think that's a must. And I think that we might have all become a little bit too comfortable.
Yeah.
And I get where the government's, you know, coming from in terms of, you know, well, we've provided you with a very safe environment and our economy is ticking along and everyone's doing pretty good. Mm. Just be grateful you're not in Melbourne.
Yeah.
So I get that, but we do have to get the borders open, you know, and we've probably got to start taking a few more risks than they've been taking.
Premier Mark McGowan did say this week, he doubled down again, saying he wants 28 days of zero community transmission anywhere in Australia before he brings down the border. Is that wishful thinking?
Well, I mean, I think he's riding that sort of comfort zone wave of popularity. Mm. Is it wishful thinking? Well, yeah, it probably is. I mean, it just sort of comes down to no one really, I don't know that anyone can accurately predict what COVID's going to do. Mm. Will we get a wave, you know, will we get a burst of it here? Probably when we open up the borders.
Yeah.
But, I mean, people have to understand that that's the risk.
That's going to happen.
Do you want to take the risk?
Yeah.
And then, you know, how does the government react after that? Do we go back into lockdown?
And what's the number?
Not, because I don't think. Well, yeah. And what numbers do you do that at? You know, and that's obviously, you know, especially with an election coming up. You know, the McGowan government would just love to continue with no COVID.
Yeah.
Because then there's no one, you know, I mean, if there's no COVID, there's no complaint.
Exactly. So in my mind, I'm kind of thinking that the Labor Brains Trust is thinking, how long can we keep, just March 14? Can we keep them closed till then?
Yeah. So, and that's not to say they haven't done a good job and they're not doing a good job.
Of course.
They are. But, yeah. I mean, it's just, do we keep going like this forever? No.
Yeah.
We can't.
Yeah.
You know, we're still trading, we're still exporting, we've still got stuff going to China for the moment.
Yeah.
You know, which is great, but there's more than just sort of shipping minerals overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while people are comfortable, the edge will come off, I think, the edge will come off that 91%.
Yeah.
So, you know, does it get down to 75% before they react? They'll make that decision, I guess.
Yeah.
But they'll ride those numbers, I think.
Indeed.
It's only natural. It's politics. I mean, look, the feds do the same. I mean, Morrison, they opted out of Palmer's challenge in the High Court because it was not popular in Western Australia, so they pulled out. Now, if that's not, you know, politicking as well.
Yeah.
I don't know what is.
I think we all need to be very aware of the fact that these politicians are going to politic. That's what they're going to do at the end.
That's what they are paid to do. You know?
Speaking of moving things around, I think we need to head to Gero, where politics are definitely getting the best of some people. Let's head there now.
The Wild West.
Ben O'Shea. Jeff Parry's really got the whip cracked down. I think you might have got someone.
Very unco.
No, not at all. Right on time. Now, as Jeff did say, he's been away for a couple of weeks and you're still fascinated with Gero. What is a magistrate up there telling one bloke?
Yeah, nothing has changed, Jeffrey. Still obsessed with what's happening up in Gero. And it's like something out of a spaghetti western. The judge, if you imagine him like the sheriff, has said to this bloke, you know, you have till noon to get out of Dodge. And that's noon today.
Oh, really? Oh, it's today?
Yeah. So this all went down in the magistrate's court yesterday. He's given this bloke, the 72-year-old, till noon today to vacate Geraldton. Some people would say that's not a punishment at all, but some very unkind people, I would never say that.
72? What is he doing?
So, well, he's been making a bit of a nuisance of himself around town for the past 3 months, and quite seriously this week has been seen walking around the neighbourhoods carrying a replica rifle, which has caused the lockdown of a local Catholic school. So it's really not acceptable. He's been hanging around government buildings, trying to get access into some of the, you know, defence department's buildings, just generally being a bit of a pest.
So the order is to just leave town.
So he's going to move it to someone else's jurisdiction.
Yeah, so go to Dongra.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's part of his bail condition. So the police didn't want him to get bail at all because they know that he's just, you know, we know with these type of characters, it's all well and good until, you know, something goes a bit too far. And so they think the best place for him is behind bars. And certainly if he's out on bail, they don't want him anywhere in Geraldton. And so the magistrates told him the order that he has to leave town by noon today. And then he said back to the magistrate, well, who cares about Geraldton anyway? It's only a speck on the map.
I've got a serious question. Have they done a mental health or health assessment on this gentleman?
They think he's okay to stand trial, but he will be standing trial down here in Perth next month. So he's got until, I think, October 8 to make his way down to the Big Smoke, leave his replica rifle in the bin, preferably.
Yes.
And then we'll see what happens to him after that.
So he's got to saddle up his horse.
And the
posse will be standing on the Grenough Geraldton border, making sure that he crosses over and heads on down south.
Exactly, as he rides off into the sunset wearing his poncho.
It's high noon, Ben.
Yeah, it's high noon. Yeah, that's right. The town's not big enough for the both of them.
Speaking of towns not being big enough, now look, a 72-year-old man walking around with a replica shotgun is one thing. A bridezilla is a very different thing. I don't think I'd want to cross the latter.
What's going on down south? More dangerous.
So we
have an interesting situation at the moment down in the southwest. So because of the borders being closed to travel interstate or internationally, and the regional borders reopening, and people maybe having a little bit more money, there has been a boom in weddings happening in the southwest, in Margaret River and Busselton and Dunsborough.
Sure.
Wedding celebrants are saying they've quadrupled. It's the busiest they have ever had it.
Wow.
Yep. But the flip side of that is there's all, and this is just me joining the dots here. This hasn't been proven. Maybe Jeffrey could investigate it. But there's also been a spate of party house debacles. So these are people from Perth who've booked houses on Airbnb or whatever platform they use, and are going down having massive parties. To me, it seems like some of these could be, you know, sort of like, sort of wedding after parties and stuff like that. If you're going down with your bunch of mates for a wedding weekend, it's going to get pretty rowdy.
Yeah. One of the reasons why they're having these massive house parties is because to afford any of those houses, specifically in Yarling Up and Eagle Bay, you need 55,000 of your friends to join you.
Yeah, exactly. It is expensive. It is eye-wateringly expensive to get some of these properties. So it's no surprise at all, Jenny. You're absolutely right that you're getting, you know, sort of 15 young people all chipping in or more, and for a weekend, and then they're just going bananas. And the people living next door, who probably also are in equally expensive mansions that they own, are not that chuffed about it.
But who's going to? I just don't understand. Who's going to rent out, you know, like a million-dollar property to an 18-year-old private school boy from the western suburbs, you know, who wants to go down there for a quiet weekend with 50 of his mates? You just stand to be heading for grief, don't you?
Unless they're very cheeky and use one of those online platforms and book under, say, their mum or dad's name, which is even more terrifying for the owner.
And how does it, I don't know how it works from a tax perspective, but any damage to the property, can you write that off against your tax? Because these people are probably, you know, negative gearing the heck out of it.
Yeah, look, I think there's going to be so many dramas over summer, which the tourism minister, Paul Papley, keeps laughing about people need to show common sense. I think he needs to wise up and realise that the costs online are absolutely astronomical for accommodation down south. It's ridiculous.
people need to show common sense. That horse has bolted, perhaps.
Indeed. Speaking of horse bolting, we all want to get the hell out of here. Ben O'Shea, you have a lovely weekend. We'll chat to you next week.
Sounds good.
Geoffrey Parry, what are you up to today and tomorrow? What's the weekend hold for you?
I'm going to pick my grandson up from school this afternoon. That's pretty much what all I've got on.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're going to go swimming?
No, probably not today.
Okay.
No, too late in the afternoon.
Get an ice cream?
Yeah, maybe do that. I get into trouble when I do that.
I hope your daughter's not listening. thank you so very much for joining us once again.
Let's do it again next week.
Please. You have a lovely weekend. We'll see you on 7 News on Sunday night.
Yes, Jenna.
Beautiful. That's it from me. A big thank you to our super producers, Mel Bonolo, Natalie Bongiolo and Chloe Briffer this week. Tune in at 8:45 on Monday over on thewest.com.au/live and also on Perth Now. Or you can catch up on a replay of today's episode at 12:30 over on the internet or download the podcast. Have a lovely weekend. Stay safe. See you Monday.
You've been listening to The West Live with Jenna Clark. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.
It's the podcast that has Australia captivated. Claremont, The Trial. We take you inside the courtroom with over 3 million downloads already. Catch up on Claremont, The Trial at thewest.com.au or where you get your podcasts.